You are listening to EP Culture Beat, the underground source of El Paso, Texas.
Gamble Music, aka Gabriel, sitting here with the great Omer Tlaloc, getting ready to talk with the master and get tatted at the same time. So, Omer, you've described yourself as, let's see here, an artist, a tattooist, a craftsperson, a gardener, and carrier of tradition and culture. Can you introduce yourself and explain how you received your name, Omer Tlaloc?
Thank you for the kind words and compliments. I'm a few of those things. Yeah, and so how I got my name is, you know, I was going through some awakening processes with my identity. And I was following a few conscious Chicanos and different groups and organizations that were pushing the decolonized movement.
Uh-huh.
And Omer Tlaloc, you know, that's a, it's a name, that name Tlaloc, it comes from my awareness. The first time I ever heard Tlaloc, it was at Hueco Tanks State Park, National State Park here in El Paso, Texas, outside of El Paso, Texas. But there's a pictograph there that's a few thousand years old, and so when I first seen that pictograph, I knew that it was like something that I belonged to, you know, that something that was from my like my culture, you know.
Yeah.
And grew up like Chicano style, you know, here in El Paso, and I heard a lot of, you know, the family, you know, always talking about you know, our culture, Mexican culture, is very always, you know, it's always kind of related to Aztec culture. You know, that's like the word that is used a lot around here, Aztec or Azteca, right?
Uh-huh.
And so when I heard that name, Tlaloc, at the state park, they said that it was from the Aztec culture, right? And so when I heard those state rangers speaking like that, I felt like, well, that's who I was, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so he, Tlaloc, was the first character that kind of pulled me towards my identity, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so I kept close to him, and I always remembered him because I met him when I was fairly young. You know, my family, my grandma would take me out there. And so she would take, my grandma and my grandpa would take us to Hueco Tanks. And so I always remembered that Tlaloc pictograph that was there. It's kind of infamous because it's like the largest one, you know, the largest cave drawing. Yeah, it's like the whole spot. Hueco Tanks is very famous for these pictographs and stuff. So anyways, down the road, you know, I trials and tribulations of life and stuff, until when finally I was actually asked to choose a nickname for myself, which I had already been thinking about, kind of like legally changing my name for like an ethnic correction.
Uh-huh.
You know, because I was just having trouble with with my identity and the way that I was brought up and stuff, and I was having trouble with my upbringing in the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
And so I was just rebelling, I felt, and wanted to change my name because, you know, I was raised like fatherless, and so my last name, it didn't really mean anything to me because, you know, it was like my father's name, but I never really, you know, knew him or hung out with him and stuff like that. So I always wanted to just feel like someone else, like I recreated myself, you know. Well, I was asked to take on a nickname during a protest so that, you know, I wouldn't be identified by my legal birth name. And so it was a sticky situation, but then, you know, I just said like Omit Lalok, you know, that's what you can, you know, call me on the walkie-talkies and stuff. And so that's from that time on, that was at Standing Rock in 5 years ago. I don't even know how to keep track of time like that, but when we were at Standing Rock, after that time, it just stuck, you know, and I went around and just was telling people to call me Ome. And I never really introduced myself like, my name is Ome Tlaloc, you know, because it's kind of, I don't know. I just use it like, you know, as my artistic name. And so that I kind of just pay homage to that character, Tlaloc. That's part of my upbringing, and, you know, I try my best to go and see the pictograph and visit him, and that's I dedicate my life to Tlaloc and his teachings, and I'm always drawing him and stuff like that. So anyways, I have a close connection, and it's a long story, man. That was a good question.
Yeah.
You know, like, I can go more in depth to, like, the kind of spiritual side, I guess, but yeah, maybe we'll save that for another day.
I feel very honored that to even be offered that that tattoo of that pictograph.
Oh yeah, man.
Man, I don't know, just something about it.
Yeah, I suggest it. Most definitely. I suggest it, you know, because you're from here, from El Paso, and I like to tell people a lot. There's him, and there's another one. I don't know if you've seen he's like a macaw guy, macaw god, that he's basically like the mascot for the El Paso Archaeological Museum. And so, yeah.
The first mascot, you were saying.
Yeah, yeah. El Paso. So they're like those two. I like to tell my little cousins and stuff, like, they're the original El Pasoans, you know?
All right. Well, you mentioned that your grandmother told you where you came from, and that started your journey into exploring your native roots. Can you tell me more about how your spiritual journey cultivated itself into your life?
Spirituality has been a big, big part of my life. I don't know. I think it's like something that you just kind of, you feel, and so you gravitate towards it.
Yeah.
But it's, to me, it's just important. I don't know. I don't understand why I have the sense of like wanting to work on that aspect of myself. It's a calling, you know. I don't know. I've been down in the gutter, like, in really bad shape, and, you know, not wanting to live and stuff like that. And so, there's been times where, I think, you know, in the darkest moments and stuff, where those things that are of spirit, or, you know, of natural phenomenons and stuff like that, they'll appear, they'll present themselves in your life. And I'm just kind of like, I feel really, what can I say, kind of just interested, and I'm always like open to those events, you know. I'm always looking forward to them, and I spend my time trying to be involved with different things, like supernatural things, you know, meditation and drumming, you know, singing and drumming, and, you know, tattooing, cool. You know, enduring pain, sleep deprivation, hallucinogenics, you know, but, you know, through the use of medicine and ceremony and stuff like that. All of that is like nice. part of what I think should be natural human life.
That's awesome.
Know? Yeah.
So every time I was blessed enough to receive one of your tattoos, you not only made me feel very comfortable and even meditative, but you also conduct a preliminary ritual to invoke the ancestors, as well as say a prayer in our ancient native tongue, Nahuatl, and give explanation as to what everything symbolizes. And you even conduct a limpia using natural native incenses and an eagle feather. Can you explain the importance of this ritual and what it means to you?
We use tools and you know, they're like any other tool. You know, like when we build, we use saws and hammers and nails and screws and stuff. But yeah, when we're working on that eternal part of ourselves, you know, I think tattooing has a big part to do with the eternal part of ourselves.
Nice.
Yeah, like that part that's never gonna die, you know. And so I think in order to receive a tattoo, you gotta be strong, you gotta be ready. And so I think you gotta be as strong as you would be, like, if you were going to, you know, kind of give an offering, you know, like, of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so we treat it like that. And what we do is we respect the people that came before us,
mm-hmm.
that tattooed and that have passed it down to us, you know, like, even as early as like the Chicano movement and stuff like that, and, you know, but as far back as like the Olmec, you know, or something, like,
wow.
Where you had different types of body modifications, like, you know, the flattening and the elongation of the heads, and, you know, the septum stretching and the ear stretching, the scarification, and the different ceremonies and rituals that led to offerings, you know, of sacrifice of blood was what it was, you know, of yourself. And so you I think, you know, we respect those old people that did that, and you know, we just try to remember who we are, I think. And so we use some of those instruments. They've been used since, you know, the dawn of time, I think, and we apply them now in our time. A lot of us Chicano people, that stuff, you know, it was beaten out of us, you know, it was taken, and for whatever reason it was hidden and kept secret for a long time. So some of the families, you know, they for their choices and stuff hadn't had access to these different tools and stuff like that. So, like, for me, I'm just one of those that kind of woke up in my family, and I was told, you know, that we come from these roots, but I ultimately tried my best to seek all those tools and the teachings about how to live in that way of the way that, you know, the understanding of how some of our ancestors they did tattooing, you know.
Cool.
And as time goes by, more and more gets revealed about it.
Nice.
Yeah.
So your tattoo style is becoming ever more influenced by ancient native culture from the region. You have the Thunderbird tattoo, which is a sacred symbol of El Paso's Franklin Mountain. You have drawings of potential face tattoos that take influence from ancient culture from the region. like Casas Grandes and all the way to Chaco Canyon. What's the significance of creating new art for your tattoos that's inspired by our native roots from our region?
I think what it is that it makes it living, you know, it makes it alive when we make the new art from, you know, referencing and being inspired by the old designs and the old work that the people did before us, you know, that they weren't, you know, influenced by any outside, I look at it like they were just more innocent or something and they were pure. So those symbols, they were just really, you know, they made sense, you know, to human life at that moment in time. And we may not be like a lot of those people anymore, you know, so like 100%, but we still carry that in us, you know, that, you know, the bloodline, it's in our heart and stuff like that. And so I think it's all just about trying to make it, you know, be alive. I think to be alive, to evolve it and to pass it down so that it can mark history also. Yeah,
that's so dope. I really like the face tats that are inspired by the pottery from Casas Grandes and stuff.
Definitely. Yeah, it was one of the breakthroughs like in the past 5 years, I think, that some anthropologists had been talking about the possibility of face tattooing in Casas Grandes. And when I came across it, I said to myself, well, yeah, of course, you know, there was already evidence by my awareness of, you know, accounts of Spanish missionaries and people like Juan de Oñate, you know, coming through the region and calling the local natives of this place Los Rayados because they were all tattooed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, man. And so, like, they mentioned seeing them in multiple occasions, but those lines across their face and arms and legs and body, they would never erase.
Yeah.
So they were always there, and so they were coined the name Rayados. Yeah, the people from around here, because of their elaborate tattoo work that they carried all over their body and stuff.
So are you self-taught or were you trained into traditions by the elders?
I've learned a lot from many different people. I mean, I couldn't... All this information, you know, it's not like... It doesn't belong to me or it's not mine or anything. So I feel like in a lot of ways, I suffered a lot to be in this position.
Nice.
But I like to think that it was just, you know, an offering of myself. And so some days I just sit like every Friday and Saturday night, you know, just drawing and stuff. When I remember I used to like to like go out and party and try to like get myself into trouble and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so nowadays, like I find myself in peace, you know, like on the weekend I'm just creating art and stuff like that. But so check this out, I'll tell you the story about how I learned how to tattoo. How's that? Cool. Like my mom is the one who taught me how to tattoo.
Wow.
And the reason for that was because when I was really young, so my mom was really young too when she had me. She was only 14 when she had me, but she turned 15 like the same month or something. So she was a young mama. And, you know, they were cholas, you know. That was the culture that they were born into at that time. Pachuca cholas, right?
Yeah.
They had the tres puntos, you know, on their bone, on their wrist. And right there, like, on the what do you call that? Like on the web of the thumb, between the thumb and the finger.
Yeah.
You know, and then they had, like, my mom has a dot right on her cheek and right here on her chin.
Cool.
And she's got her, like, she's got a few tattoos anyways. And so as growing up, I was like, Mom, like, what the heck is that? You know, what is that? And she would tell me, you know, it's a tattoo. And I would say, how did you get that? Like, it was so interesting to me. Like, it never washes off, you know, and it's always there. And it was like, it was her. Like, that's who she was. And it was what, like, a culture or something, you know, cool. Because everybody had it. Like, all my tias had it. My cousins had it. My uncles, they had their heads tattooed. They had their necks tattooed. They had their whole chest, their back, their arms, their leg, everything, you know?
Yeah.
And so growing up, that's what I would see. And that's, so my mom said, you know, we got a needle and we got some ink and we dip it in the, we wrap the needle around with the thread and then we dip it in the ink and then we poke it like that by hand. And she would tell me. So that was my teaching.
Wow.
That was my teaching. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so that's how it goes, man. It's like, and I kind of came to that, you know, realization recently, but like, I just keep asking myself, like, yeah, why did I do this? You know, like, how did I start doing this? And I think it's just, for me, it was in my family and stuff. But yeah, man, for me, it's the Chicano culture that got me doing this, but... You know, I feel like I've been influenced by other folks like Samuel Olman from Mexico City, different folks that were doing hand poke tattoos like Canahus in Secuepec territory, and Nahuali in LA. You know, those they're older folks than me, and so not too much, but you know, they're like a generation there. And so I got teachings from fellow relatives, you know, different nations and stuff like I've talked to, and they've helped me, you know.
I'm curious about how you use the sacred medicine peyote to connect you in life and in your art, as well as the sweat lodge gatherings.
I mean, so peyote is like, it's I consider it to be like really good medicine for your well-being, you know. So you, when you eat it or you drink it, you're drinking some alkaloids, you know, that it's got like different alkaloids and different properties that have antibacterial, antifungal, antiviral, antibiotic properties. And it's also like a heart medicine, so it connects you to your heart. But I got introduced to that medicine by my partner Claudi.
Nice.
And so, yeah, there's a long line there of medicine. It's part of the. I mean, the word is like in the Mexican language and stuff like that. So there's a connection there. You know, I like to draw it and stuff. And I like to drink it every now and then to, you know, if I'm sick or something. I'll have a little bit, like it's just like a herb, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a big thing in my life, but. You know, it is, you know, and the people that I love, it's really big in a lot of people that I love life. And so, it's around.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's here and it helps people. It doesn't hurt people. So that's kind of like, if it's not hurting people, then if it's helping people, then that's cool. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, and the sweat lodge. I feel like nowadays I'm a little bit more connected to mainly just like singing and drumming. I really like to sing and drum, but yeah, sometimes there's the sweat is like, really useful for endurance, you know, and to build your different senses, you know, because when you go in there, you can't see. So, like, you got to build up your other senses. So it's like practice so that you can use all your other senses in there, because when you go in there, you can't see anything. So it helps you, like, with different, you know, different ways. And the endurance, too, it kind of helps you when you go in there and you just kind of, you come out a new person, you know what I mean? It's like a sauna.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It helps. It's medicine, too. Have you ever been to the sweat lodge?
No.
Oh, okay. I gotta take you, man.
Yeah, that'll be dope.
Yeah.
So, you tattoo yourself, and I particularly admire your snakeskin tattoo on your arm. Can you tell me about your tattoos and their meanings?
Oh, yeah. That one in particular, I did that one when I was, you know, like, getting kind of... I was getting free from some drama in my life.
Uh-huh.
And so I marked myself to remember that time in my life that, you know, I basically kind of, for me, the way I see it is that I won life, you know, like I chose life. And so for me, it was, I'm going to choose life, and that tattoo was able to guide me and help me, inspire me to move forward after some tribulations in my life
that,
you know, could have ended in a pretty wicked way.
Yeah.
And so I chose life, and I said, I'm going to be, you know, I had a choice. Also, I could be a soldier, or I could be a warrior, and I chose to be a warrior, so I put a warrior tattoo on me.
Wow. And do you have any other tattoos?
Yeah, I do. I think I have like 13 at the moment or something like that. Yeah.
Did you do them all yourself?
No, man, no. Some I got like in different places on the streets or... I don't think I've ever had a tattoo at a conventional professional tattoo shop.
Yeah.
All my tattoos have been either done by me, like in my living room.
Yeah.
Or in my room or something, or by the homies, like, you know.
That's nice, man.
At a house or something like that.
How long have you been tattooing, and how long have you been doing traditional tats?
I've dedicated myself for the past 5 years to cultural tattooing, like traditional stuff, yeah.
That's about the time when I met you.
Yeah, man. Yeah, you met me right at the time where I was getting really serious about bringing Mesoamerican designs, you know, Puebloan designs into existence. I've been tattooing. I think my first tattoo, it was when I was about... like 14 or 15, I did my first tattoo on my homie Albert.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
What was it?
It was a cross on his face.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a cross on his cheek. On his cheek.
Wow.
Yeah, that was my first one that
was
I
that
ever
a hand
did.
Poke?
It was a hand poke tattoo.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Wow.
We were like 15, but we were skateboarding, and so, you know, that sacred cross, it was kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Yeah. Right out the gate, you started with the tattoos that had spiritual meaning, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think, yeah, for sure. I think he wanted, you know, just a cross. It wasn't like, I don't even think he believed in Jesus or anything. My friend Albert, he was, a wild one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice, man. I want to congratulate you on your shop. It's very inspiring. that you've opened your own shop in Montana Vista.
It's 3520 Mark Jason, 79938 El Paso, Texas.
Can you talk about what you have available for sale?
Oh, yeah, man. Well, mainly, you know, like my tattoo service is always available for anybody that's interested. And but, yeah, I have like prints of my artwork. I have original pieces. We've downsized some. My partner and I have been working together to make like small postcard prints. So we have a lot of that. We got a bunch of art from other artists too. We have a book library area. It's kind of like a cooperative space. So there's a few folks, different art people that crafters that come in and they leave earrings, you know, there's some necklaces around, a lot of stickers too, from a lot of stuff that's made even like down here in Juarez. You know, we have a connection to a few folks that make different clothing and even like sketchbooks and stuff, like kind of like totally like homemade, handmade stuff, you know, like there's a lot of zines around too that people have made. There's like a cool kind of type of anarchist feel with some of the products, you know, revolutionary messages and some of our books too are like politically motivated, you know, for freedom of liberation, you know, and autonomy and of people and stuff and power to people. And what else do we got? We got sometimes, because we garden, right? And so sometimes we got like our produce from the garden. We got seeds, you know, that you can come and get that are already climatized to our region. Ancestral seeds like the amaranth and some different types of corn and stuff. But yeah, we got plants versus we got everything that we can try to, like, in a good way, you know, just kind of sell out, you know, to people. And stuff that's made by our hands, you know, crafted by us. We don't really, you know, try to get things that are like commercially made or industrially made or stuff that's made by hand, like with different reasons and stuff for you know, stuff that sends a message. That's mainly like kind of the vibe that we have here for our products and stuff, you know.
Yeah. When I met you, I know that you had come from Standing Rock, and you went out there to go protest the pipeline that was being made out there. I know that's where you met your partner, Gladia, who's a very awesome person. You guys are always very welcoming, and greatest vibes ever. So
that's cool.
Yeah, man. So, like, how did that affect you?
Yeah, talking about Standing Rock. Yeah, man, we were protecting that the Missouri River is what it was. The main thing, it was going to be a pipeline, the Dakota Access Pipeline. And so I showed up in October, I think, from LA, from East LA. I got invited. And so we rode out. And when I got there, it was just something that I was calling, you know. Actually, man, if I can go back all the way, it was a dream, you know.
Wow.
I was answering a dream of mine. An actual dream, like a literal dream, and I was answering like a calling, some spiritual calling. It was really, really wild for me, but I was willing to lay my life on the line, so I just went because I was ready to change, you know, something in my life, to be somebody new and stuff.
Wow.
You know? And I was coming from a whole nother viewpoint. And I started to, like, spend time learning about you know, our roots and stuff like that, and where, how big of an influence like the native ancestry is in my life, and just kind of rekindling with that part of myself. And then so I went out there because I had a dream, and I had to answer this dream because I needed to talk to an elder from out there, and I felt like I knew that that I would meet him out there, hear him or her, and I did. But but you know, it was a whole journey, and it was intense. You know, I got, oh man, there's so much that happened. There's so much. I stayed there from like October to March, April. March, I think.
Yeah.
October, November, December. February, actually. I was there for 5 months. And, yeah, we got to see like a lot of things. I saw like, I'll tell you a story. So like one of the first things that I ever saw when I got there, there was going to be some gathering for they were going to honor some treaty, like the treaty that was going to be, violated by the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Yeah.
And so they had a morning kind of calling and get together, and they took out this big drum and they started singing these songs in Lakota. And culture is just really, really beautiful. You know, it can like take you back, you know, like couple hundred years and stuff,
yeah,
in time. And so as they were singing those songs, and as that drum was playing really loud,
yeah,
you know, they asked everybody to put their phones away. No one could record or anything like that. And so, but what happened was, from the distance, like from the east side, it was like the direction east, 4 huge bald eagles started flying in to the place where they were singing. And when I saw that happening, like, I don't know what it was, but it was like, I was like, I got this crazy chill. Like, I was getting like healed, like, or something. Like, I was, it's like being, I don't know, when you connect like that, the earth, it like goes through you, through your chill, you know?
Yeah.
Like from your feet up all the way, like you're planted on the ground. And that's what I felt. I was like, these eagles are here, and they came over us, and they just circled over us like that, like a good couple of times. They were just circling, and they came. And
wow,
when that happened, that was like the first time that I ever heard like a war cry. You know, that's the first time I ever heard that. And when I heard it, it was like, man, I felt blessed, you know? I felt like I was at home. I felt home. Like,
yeah.
It was amazing. And I was just, man, it was emotional, you know? It was like, what? It was supernatural, you know? Like I talked to you about, those are the types of events that you just can't explain, right? Those eagles, they come when you start drumming. They'll just...
Wow.
They'll come over, and they'll just fly over you, and they'll be with you, like they, like it's like they know or something. It's weird. It's, I don't know how to explain it, but you connect with them, you know. And so like that was the first thing that I saw, like one of the first things that I saw when I was there. And it was like after that, I just said like I was supposed to leave in a week. I was supposed to only be there for a week and hand out some clothes and stuff, and take supplies and some firewood. But my man was leaving. He got arrested, actually. So we stayed like 3 extra days because he was in jail at a protest. He got caught in a protest. And like an action, you know, they went out and he got arrested at an action. And then, so we stayed 3 extra days, and I was happy. After those 3 days, he got out and was like, I got a book. I got to go back to LA because I have work or something. And I was like, sorry, man, but I can't go with you.
Yeah.
I have to stay here. Like, I knew that I had to stay there. And so That was like one story from Standing Rock.
Wow. Yeah. Were you doing tattoos out there?
Yeah, actually, yeah, I did. I did do tattoos out there. Yeah, it was, that was like around the time that tattooing, it was like, it was really kind of making a really awesome presence for the indigenous community and stuff. And so a lot of people wanted tattoos. And because I hung out with like most of the Chicanos, it was like, yeah, let's do Mexican, you know, symbols and stuff like that. So I was doing some Mexican symbols, but I also tattooed some Lakota people also, like with more northern style. You know, I actually tattooed an eagle and stuff for Alan White Eagle.
Wow.
And that was cool. We did like, we did like 6 hours a day for a whole week to hand poke like a sleeve of an eagle. God. That was the longest tattoo that I ever did, and it was a good one though. Longest tattoo I've ever hand poked, I guess, like the most I've ever hand poked. Yeah.
That's incredible, man.
Yeah, just, you know, put time and effort into anything and anything you love, and you'll do something good with it.
Yeah. That definitely reflects in your art and your tattoos and in your shop and your path, man. So,
how do you feel, Gabriel? How's it felt?
I'm like in another world, dude. I'm floating in between reality and the ether.
How does it feel when that needle comes back?
Like, after a while, like, it doesn't hurt. But, I get into a meditative trance, bro, right away with tattoos. I have visions. I see these different kinds of spirits just appear right here with my eyes closed. I see the different things. These animals come, plants come alive. It's so crazy, man. My ancestors come. It's amazing. Where can we find you online? What are your socials?
It's Art Ometlaloc. So it's like art, like ArtOmetlaloc. And that's basically, if you look that word up, then you'll see some of my work online.
I would like to thank you again for letting us be in your space and to allow me to receive your tattoo. It was a pleasure speaking with you, getting to know you better. And thank you, bro, for allowing us to be here with you guys.
Awesome, man. Thank you guys, too. And to Culture Beat also, thank you all. EP Culture Beat, yeah, thank you very much, Miguel and Gambo, your lady, everybody that's here. Thank you so much for blessing my place and coming over with your presence and your time and stuff. Thank you.